Hey everybody, what's going on? Good morning. We're here, we're live, and we're getting ready to do another one of these fun interviews with an old friend of ours, who I'm going to introduce in a second. But today's episode and all of our episodes don't happen unless our good friends at Next Home Brandywine give us their support like they do. Dan Peasy is a longtime friend of mine. Him and his team of professional realtors, they do provide guidance, knowledge, and information whether you're a buyer or a seller. Go to nexthomebrandywine.com for all the details to contact an agent. They do service Philadelphia and the surrounding counties, but they do handle nationwide referrals because there is offices in 48 of the 50 states. Be sure to ask for the NH5 listing special, or you can call them directly at 484-364-4862. That's 484-364-4862. Go to nexthomebrandywine.com and make sure you tell them Totally Driven Entertainment sent you. And here we are, another old friend who, last time we talked, we did one of these. It was before this whole video thing that we did. It was before a pandemic. And we found out we had like this whole world of things in common. So we're going to find out if they're still in common. Let's welcome the man, the myth, the legend himself from the silencer, Mr. Charlie Corletta. Charlie, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, eh? I've been good, man. How you been?
Doing good. With these circumstances, I'm doing damn freaking good. How about that?
Yeah, that's what I like to hear. And you know what, dude? That's kind of what I've been hearing across the board with most people, is that they've been doing actually relatively well given the circumstances. They found new ways to be creative, new ways to connect with old friends and people they haven't spoke with in a long time. So it's really inspiring to hear that. And I'm glad to see that you're doing good. I heard that you moved out of Philly. Now you're in a new spot. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, man. It's the one thing I never would have thought I would have ever have left Philly, but I did, and it was the best thing I ever did, and I'm loving life in Nashville.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome. We were saying right before we got on here, I too love Nashville. Great place to tour, great place to hang out, and we do still have some things in common, because just like you, after we spoke in our initial interview a couple years back, I also moved out of New York, not too far. I just moved to like Central Jersey area, and it's just a nice slower pace. People seem to be a lot nicer. It's just a little bit more laid back. I can focus a lot better now on all my endeavors, whereas when I was in New York, there was just like a lot of static around you. You know what I mean? There's a lot of noise, a lot of people. People just go, go, go. Now I get to take a step back. I get to relax. And it seems to be benefiting very well. So
nice. Well, one of the things I saw that you were involved in, I don't think you were involved, when we talked a few years ago, was at the School of Rock.
Yeah. So as a matter of fact, when we had spoken, I had just pretty much left School of Rock, maybe about a year before we had spoken. Okay. But I was involved with Somerville School of Rock, as well as two other School of Rock franchises back in the day. I was a music director and a drum instructor and vocal instructor. And then I reprised my role when I was getting ready to make the move to Central Jersey. Now I'm only a couple minutes from the actual school. And I picked up right where I left off when I originally left. I'm a music director. So actually, our kids, which is awesome, during this whole pandemic, they had no ability to play shows. So for anyone who's not familiar with School of Rock, it's a performance-based after-school music education program. So our whole goal is to get you, the student, to come into our school, take lessons, but more importantly, get involved in our performance program where I link you up with other bandmates and we create like these little bands so you could do a big performance at the end of the season. Now, with the pandemic hitting, we didn't get a chance to have our seasonal show. So what I ended up doing was I just rolled out our seasonal show from let's say it started in January. I just rolled it out all the way until September and gave them like double the amount of work and double the amount of songs. And I literally met with each and every kid. So we're talking like maybe 40 kids in total. Wow. Once a week, individually, one-on-one through Zoom, so that I could see their progress. I could see how their playing developed, make sure that they were on top of their material. And we literally just this past weekend finally were able to have an outdoor gig for our kids. I know the parents were stoked. The kids were excited. And you know what? Everyone got their money's worth, which is like the most important thing for me as a music director. I want to make sure the parents are happy, that they get their money's worth, that the kids are growing and becoming better musicians. From what I've been hearing, a lot of the schools didn't do that. They either just live stream the kids' shows or they just like kind of gave up entirely. Like they threw their hands up and didn't know what to do. And me personally, I was like, dude, like we have Zoom. Like this is so easy. I'm doing nothing all day. I'm stuck in my home. So I can literally meet with every kid every day for 30 minutes and get them locked in. And you know what? It really paid off. And to be honest, Bay, like it's the most rewarding job I ever had. And I'm finally in a spot where my entire life revolves around making money with music. So that's all I've ever wanted. So I couldn't ask for a better. Yeah, I couldn't ask for a better life.
Dude, you know, that whole School of Rock thing, like I'm so envious of these kids today to have that opportunity. Like dude, when I was a kid, if there was something like that, my God, like, you know, when I was going and taking guitar lessons from, you know, little corner music stores and, you know, they want to teach you like, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb and Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star on guitar. And I'm like, no, I want to hear like freaking I Want You from Kiss or something. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's our whole motif. And that's the whole premise of School of Rock as a whole. It is a corporate entity and it's a franchise. So, you know, anyone can, with the right capital, can go and start a School of Rock franchise. And for us, the whole premise is let's encourage these kids to play music based off of the stuff they love and the stuff that interests them and they like.
That's awesome. That's
like I remember when I was a kid, Bay, like just like you, if I want to learn a song, I had to like rewind a tape over and over again or put the needle on the record over and over again. Now they, aside from having the program, they have all these tools at their disposal, like with the internet. They have YouTube, they have Ultimate Guitar. We actually just rolled out something called the School of Rock Method app and Method Engine, which basically gives you access to like thousands of songs and tablature and theory and gives you every tool that you need to be an awesome musician. And it's frightening, dude. Like I'll assign a song and it could be a really complex song. Like let's say Living Color, Cult of Personality. That is not an easy song by any stretch of the imagination. I'll give it to these kids and expect to maybe have some progress in 3 or 4 weeks. And within like a week or two, they have the song nails like to the point where they could they're almost ready to perform it live. So it's like, wow, man, kids are learning and growing and evolving exponentially at a rate that you and I could probably never have fathomed when we were that age.
It makes me excited for the future of rock music. You know, the rock world and the metal world has been, you know, on the down low the last so many years, you know, with this whole hip-hop explosion and in the forefront of the music world. But I think, you know, the future with these kids coming out of these schools of rock is going to be the future of music again.
100%. I've been saying that for years now. And the kids that I have in my programs that are like ultra successful in the program tend to go on and be ultra successful when they get out of high school into college. Being whether they're session musicians or playing in their own bands, they kind of learn all the tricks of the trade. And because they're exposed to so many different styles of music, like I just don't focus on classic rock or alternative rock. I will give them everything from Motown, funk, R&B, classical, all the way up to like the modern active rock stuff and, you know, all the classic metal stuff and everything. But they're becoming like these sponges, just absorbing all these different styles and entities. And they're going on to create awesome things. And what I like to do, even to go a little further than that, besides just music education, I want to get them understanding what this whole algorithm thing is and what social media is all about and how to work it in your favor to see like a real return on your investment. Because a lot of like what you mentioned, like the whole hip hop movement now, they've dialed in really well to SoundCloud, to Spotify, and they know how to work those numbers and they're pumping out, they're pumping out material like every week, every month. And so they're staying relevant and they're at the forefront of everything. So what I'm trying to teach my kids is that same mentality and that same motif of like, listen, like even if you're young right now and you don't have like the best song or whatever, just start putting it out there, put yourself out there, let people watch you grow and evolve as an entertainer, as a musician, as an artist. And by the time you're 18, 19, 20, you can literally have the world in the palm of your hands as long as you're working the numbers. So it's really important that they know that nowadays.
Well, I mean, just from talking with you right now, and I can hear the passion in your voice and all, but how has this even helped you personally as, you know, a guy in the music business and all this, you know, social media and just music business part and also as a musician?
So I would say that as a musician first, it's helped me leaps and bounds, because every time I cast a new song for these kids, I have to be privy to that song. I have to be educated on that song. So I have just like a whole catalog, a whole back catalog of material that I have to go back and listen to and learn so that I can direct my kids to play it properly. So in that, I'm getting the same education they are. And 9 times out of 10, when we're in the rooms together and they're performing and they're rehearsing, they're teaching me things like little licks, little tricks that maybe I didn't know, or maybe I like kind of threw away or put on the back burner for years. So I always say that those who teach become better students, and those who learn become better teachers. So I'm kind of stuck in that bubble now, which is awesome. It's made me a million times better at my craft, at my instrument. And it gives me more confidence when I'm able to share my knowledge with other people. It makes me reassured and feel more confident in what I say and what I do. So there's that aspect and that element. Dennis, on the flip side with the music industry, because I'm teaching these kids the ins and outs of what I know works and what I know doesn't work based off of my experience, it's a constant reminder for me. It's constant mental reinforcement so that when I'm ready to go and do a release on my own, I'm like, oh yeah, let's do that mental checklist of all the things I've told those kids, because I got to adhere to these principles as well. So it ends up being beneficial to me too.
That's awesome. Now, the big thing that we had discovered last time we talked was your involvement in the world of pro wrestling.
Yeah. Oh
yeah. Are you still hooked up over there with the Monster Factory doing stuff with Danny Cage in the group?
So I am still the greatest color commentator in the world of professional wrestling and sports entertainment, the silence of Chaz Williams, through and through, the absolute best on the mic, hands down. But I will say this, I did take some time to reevaluate what I was doing, not because I didn't want to be involved in the world of sports entertainment and pro wrestling, but the silencer itself kind of started really taking leaps and bounds ahead of what I was doing in wrestling. So I needed to put all my eggs in that basket if I wanted it to succeed at the level that I wanted to. We had been linked up with a bunch of like our biggest shows to date. We played the famous Gramercy Theater in Manhattan, in New York City, which was a dream and a goal for me to do with this band. I had also gotten a new singer, Ace Vincent, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of like working parts and pieces that I needed to get in order with the silencer. And that ship was just sailing and that was taking off. Now with the Monster Factory, I was going back occasionally. I wasn't as active as I had been in previous years. But that was just because, like I said, I have to go with where the progress is. At the factory, I was just getting my chops in as a commentator. But what I was finding was, and this is no knock on Danny, this is not a knock on the factory. It's just that there weren't opportunities coming my way. And I was knocking down on the doors. But at a certain point, as you know, in the world of professional wrestling, so you got a lot of times, you've got to wait for that spot to open up. You can push as hard as you want. You can work as hard as you want. And you're supposed to just keep working and enjoy the process. And eventually an opportunity will present itself and you can hopefully walk into that role. And it's funny because all my peers and all my, like my best friend and some of my close people have gone on to do huge things in the world of professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. Since we talked, my best friend Damian Priest is now your North American NXT champion for WWE NXT. My friend QT Marshall is over at AEW working with Dustin Rhodes and Cody and Brandy and all them, and he's doing awesome. Matt Riddle, who is another Monster Factory alumni, he's over on SmackDown now. So they're all doing it. They're killing it. Had I stayed in wrestling as a wrestler, as a worker, I think that at this point in time, I would definitely have been in some kind of position like that. But I decided years and years ago to take a step back from the active role of professional wrestling to work in color commentary. And those jobs are few and far between. And what I've been finding out, as I'm sure you know, is a lot of independent wrestling promotions they're kind of bush league. They don't really run at like elite level that they should. And I have no problem walking into that role and helping develop the talent, helping develop their product. But what you find is more times than not, the promoters or their best friend or their son or somebody involved with that promotion gets first licks and first dibs at that commentary position. Yeah. And what you find out is a lot of times they're not as great as you would hope they would be. And it comes across that way. And it's very unfortunate because I'm very confident in saying that I am really damn good at what I do. And I know that I'd be an asset to any company. And I would just like to get my reps in as a color commentator, or even just a, you know, as an analysis, as an analyst, or just a play-by-play kind of guy. But inevitably, those cards are not on the table at the current moment. I know that Danny Cage and the Monster Factory will be back up and running for their first live show since the pandemic. And I believe that's October 3rd. And I had every intention of going back. But on that same day is when I'm shooting a new music video for The Silencer. So again, The Silencer has been at the forefront. And that seems to, every time I want to go back to the factory, I have something to do with The Silencer. I have a gig. Right. I have a recording. So I just got to wait for the stars to line up in the scheduling favors there. And then hopefully I'll be back. I know Danny has told me you're always welcome to come in whenever you can. And me and Danny have a great relationship. So I do look forward to going back there. And I also look forward to seeing the new rise of students and the young crop of talent that they have coming up. So yeah, for those of you guys who don't know, go check out the world famous Monster Factory in Paulsboro, New Jersey. Best pro wrestling school.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Danny and everybody over there, man. Talent. And he knows how to teach. He truly knows how to teach.
He does. He does. He has a real, I don't want to say old school approach, because me and him came up in the old school approach where they kind of broke you down, hoping you would quit. He's got the old school approach in the sense that he's a true coach and he's a true mentor. He doesn't tell you what you want to hear. He tells you what you need to hear, whether you like it or not. And there's people on two sides of Danny Cage. They either love him or they hate him. There's not a whole lot of like in between people there. So those who love him and listen to him and take his advice, they go on to do some pretty great things. The ones who act, you know, spoiled or entitled, they don't really go anywhere, or they get to a spot where they have that opportunity and they blow it. So I always encourage those who do go to the school, no matter how much he gets under your skin sometimes, no matter how much he's driving you and pushing you and does things or says things that may contradict each other, trust the process and trust in him. And I promise you, like I said, man, Damian Priest, Matt Riddle, QT Marshall, that's just to name three of the current guys. Cody Vance is over in AEW. Like, we have so much talent that came out of that pool that are all at the top of their A game now, and they're making money and they're being successful and they're on TV. So yeah, man, Danny's the man. He's a great coach and a great mentor.
Absolutely. So that's going to lead us. You touched on it already. Let's get into this whole Silencer world, because, you know, things have changed since we spoke last. And the one big thing that really kind of surprises me is you were the lead vocalist / guitarist. You took a step down from the lead vocalist, and you have a new singer in there, Ace Vincent. That's a big move. Like, what went in your head to make you want to pull the trigger on that? And how long of a process? Like, was it like a struggle? Like, did you go back and forth with yourself fighting? Like, yes, yes, yes. And what did the rest of the band say when you made the decision?
Yeah, so to get into my head is a scary place. basically, you know, I was riding that train for a long time. I had been a lead vocalist in a previous band called Julius Caesar, and it's kind of a mixed bag of answers here. I'll try to keep it as short as I can. It all started when I was in Julius Caesar, and I actually injured myself screaming. I actually gave myself a concussion. Like a full-blown, like, car accident-style concussion, where it altered my sense of reality. It altered my mental health, and I had no idea. And I went undiagnosed for the better part of 2.5-3 years. I was getting these chronic headaches, dizzy spells every day, mood swings, like full-blown, like, rage out of nowhere, full-blown depression out of nowhere. Could not figure out what was going on. So I finally went through a full spectrum of tests. And I went to a neurologist, and they finally came back. And after they looked at some scans of my brain, they're like, you have some gray matter there that looks like indicative of having a concussion. And I explained to them the whole situation of when I remember. I'll never forget it, dude. I was in a rehearsal, and I screamed as hard as I could. I was really stressed that day. I didn't warm up, which is something that I always would do, because being a metal vocalist is much like being an athlete. You have to get your reps in. You have to warm up. And I did none of that. I just went right into it, full-blown scream, and it felt like someone just smacked me over the head with a baseball bat as hard as it could. And it was after that that my life just started spiraling in a weird way. And it was like, and it was happening very quickly and very dramatically. So again, I found out that I had a concussion like sometime later, and I kind of just chilled out. You know, I would work out, but I wouldn't scream. I wouldn't sing. I played guitar like 24/7, and that's why I became a better guitar player. And I'm at the level I'm at now. But once a year, I would still put out like a silencer single where I would go in and I would sing and scream, and it'd be okay. You know, I'd get through it and I felt all right. But then we started gigging as a full live band with the silencer. And after the last gig or two, I noticed that I was starting to feel those same feelings that I was getting when I had first gotten that concussion. And it starts scaring me a little bit. And I noticed that I was getting those mood swings again, and I was getting the dizzy spells and the headaches. So I was like, you know what? I don't want to ever go through that again, because it was such a long journey of just like unsettled feeling and just not a good feeling at all. So I was like, all right, I need to reevaluate what's going on here. Now those who do know me and know the silencer know that like I wear pretty much all the hats in that band. I'm the producer, I'm the writer, I'm doing the bookings, I'm doing the managing, I'm doing the ad campaigns. Like, it's my project, and I have my guys who are willing to work with me. So I was already doing everything to begin with. Now, when you throw that extra pressure of being a lead singer on top of everything else, being a lead singer in a rock or metal band is by far one of the hardest things you can do when you're doing it right. So I was like, I can't just have this on my shoulders anymore. And I had been toying with the idea for the better part of like a year or so, but I didn't tell anyone. I just kept going through the process. And it was funny, my bass player, Dave, who actually left the band at the tail end of 2019, he had been in a band with this guy, Ace Vincent. They were in a band called Another Day's Armor back in the day. And I had gotten linked up with Ace through Dave because of Dave's wedding. And by just going to different shows, we'd see each other out there. And he would always throw his name in the hat of, hey, man, if you ever want to do a project together, I want to really sing again, because he was out of that band, Another Day's Armor. And I got to know him, and I watched some of his videos, his music videos with that band, and he had great charisma. He had an amazing sound, a phenomenal range. And when I would put his voice in my head to my music, I was like, oh, man, that's the missing link. That's everything I wanted this band to ever sound like. And I feel like I'm a good vocalist, but I have a very distinct sound and style. But I wanted something a little bit more beefy or a little bit more consistent for our sound. So I just hit him up one day. I was like, hey, dude, remember you wanted to do a project? I was like, well, what do you think about signing on with the silencer? And he was like, something along the lines of, I never thought I couldn't wait for you to ask, or I never thought you'd ask, kind of thing. So he obviously was on board. We tried him out, and the things that he did that were his own to my music and my stuff, we all like looked at each other in the rehearsal room that first day, and we're like, yep, that's the guy. And we went into our first show with him at the Gramercy Theater in Manhattan, sold out show with this death metal band, Nile, that we all look up to. And Ace killed it. He did his own thing. He was very comfortable, and he brought a whole new sound and element to us. And it's honestly, in my opinion, Bay, I think it's the best thing that's ever happened to this band. We had a string of shows after that were ultra successful. And each show, the crowd response just got better and better and better. And I noticed that he was not afraid to jump in that crowd, to actually jump in the pit with his microphone, which a lot of singers you don't see do nowadays.
Right.
He's got this kind of, he's young, but he's got a kind of old spirit to him, which locks in perfectly with me, because I'm from the old school. And it just worked out really well. And we were able to finally get in the studio and record some new music with him. And dude, I could not have been more proud and happy.
That's awesome, dude. Now, do you still, it's funny, because I think I noticed this in the new video, Beliefs, where you're still like Are you still singing along?
Yeah. So, all right. So I guess the cat's out of the bag. I don't even know if Ace knows this yet. If he's watching, he's going to be like, what the hell? All right. So, I don't sing at all. And it's funny because you would think that I'd throw a backup mic to scream and sing or whatever, but I want the attention to be on Ace. Like, he's our front man. He's our vocalist. I'm our guitar player. So I'm okay with taking that back seat and just doing my thing, chilling, playing guitar. Now in the music video, you see a spot or two where I'm like kind of screaming behind him. I didn't actually record any screams on the record, but I did lend my voice to the vocal harmonies in the clean singing. So that's kind of layered in there to just brighten up and give the vocal harmonies more life and more of a full sound, because we noticed when he recorded, he was great to work with in the studio. He takes direction really well. He's open for any suggestion. He kind of allows me to produce him, which is phenomenal, which makes everything so easy, makes the process so enjoyable. But I remember when he left the session for Beliefs, I stayed behind with our drummer, Zachy, to do all the engineering and producing. And we're listening to the chorus and we're like, oh man, we need a harmony on this. And we're like, once we get in the studio, we get in that that workflow where it's got to happen now. You know, we can't put it off till tomorrow. We have the idea. We have to execute it right then and there. So I just jumped in the vocal booth and did a couple harmonies on top of his harmonies. So I think there's like 2 or 3 part harmonies at certain points. And it just made the song, that those choruses sound nice and full. But as far as seeing us live, I don't think you'll be seeing me rock the mic. Unless there are some times that Ace will actually throw the mic in my face for like a part while I'm playing. I'm like, oh, you mother. All right, let's do it.
That's awesome, dude. Now, how about you guys went through a bass player change too?
Yeah. So you would, when it rains, it pours, man. You know, it's like, and I think most bands would have probably buckled under this pressure because it all happened around the same time. So we get Ace, who's really good friends with our old bass player, Dave. So we're like, awesome. We got brothers in the band. We're all close. We all know each other. And then Dave pulls the trigger saying, hey, man, I just got married. I got another band, which are like my best friends, my brothers from when I was a kid. The Silencer, I really love. I don't want to leave, but I can't afford the time to like be there in the capacity you need me. And he's like, I don't want to hold you back. And he kind of felt like he was starting to hold us back because there were certain commitments like rehearsals or studio time that he couldn't make. So he manned up and was just like, hey, I got to step down. But what's awesome about Dave, and I love him for this, is that he held up and adhered to his commitments for the end of the year. So we had three big shows lined up. And that was so perfect because he was able to transition Ace into the singing role, have 3 really tight shows, and then bow out in the winter time so we could focus on writing and recording. So in that time, we were scouring for a bass player. And you know what? That was the hardest thing. Everyone would have thought that finding a lead vocalist would be the hard thing, but we just got really lucky and blessed having Ace, you know, having an experienced frontman. But finding a bass player was hard, and we kind of were racking our brains, and my bandmates had a couple people in mind, but honestly, they didn't fit the bill for one reason or another. Whether I'm a firm believer of the total package. You need to have the sound, you need to have the sound, you need to have the look, you need to have a certain personality. And for whatever reason, one or more of those things weren't connecting with me with some of these people. And then finally, we got me and Greg, my guitar player, who had been in a band previously about like 15, 16 years ago. We were like, hey, did you see that our friend Ray is back on Facebook or whatever? And he's like, yeah. I was like, oh, damn, dude. Like, why are we not asking Ray? He was our bass player in our old band. So let's just see. Let's throw it out there and see if he's interested. And he lives in upstate New York, and he was like, yeah, you know what? I'm down. Like, I loved playing with you guys when we were kids. So he jumped on board, started teaching him the material. Then the pandemic hit. So it was, you know, he had only like 2 or 3 songs under his belt that he had learned. And the whole goal was to be playing all summer because we were scheduled for this Blue Ridge Rock Festival out in Virginia. It's a 3-day festival with like the who's who of the world of hard rock and metal. Like if you can think of a modern metal or rock band, they're playing this festival. And we were a main stage band, which is going to be our first real big billing. And pandemic hit, So we're just like, all right, Ray, here's what we're going to do. Just keep working on the new stuff. We're going to eventually shoot this music video. And when I tell you that dude killed it in our music video, like he was going hard in the paint, like head banging and going nuts. And that's what I was looking for, was that guy who is a good player, a great dude to be around. And when the red light's on and the camera is rolling, he makes you feel it. He makes you want to have that energy. And yeah, dude, Ray is an awesome, awesome addition to the band. And he's a unique spirit. He's a really cool dude.
That's awesome. Now the video, the new single, Beliefs. And I remember this about your other videos too. Your videos are always so freaking awesome. So like professional. You know,
thank you.
It's something you would have seen on MTV Headbangers Ball, you know, in the prime days of Headbangers Ball. And that's what I love. I love seeing it. And I love even on this one, you did a whole like behind the scenes video to really see all this stuff, which was really super cool to watch. But the video itself, like the first thing I said to myself, where the frick did you guys find this castle?
Yeah, dude. So, all right. When we realized that, the Blue Ridge Rock Festival gig was a no-go and it was postponed till 2021. We were like, all right, we need to make something big happen because we've been sitting for the better part of 6-7 months, whatever it was. So we need to go big or go home. This is our first single with our new singer. Mm-hmm. It's our first single with our new bass player. Like, we need to come out swinging. We can't just, a lot of bands don't like that attention, believe it or not. They kind of just smoothly go into the transition and pretend like nothing ever happened. And to me, I was like, no, we want a spotlight this. Like, we got a brand new vocalist. He's better than me. The band's better than it's ever been. Like, we got to bring it, like, our A game on this. So, I linked up with a new director, a new videographer by the name of Alex. I call him AK because that was his band name back in the day when he used to play in bands. And his company is Black Wolf Imaging. Now, I had seen countless videos pop up online from different artists that worked with him. And they were just some next level groundbreaking videos. And the director we had been working with previously, you know, he was really great at what he does. But we noticed throughout the process, every time we did a video, now it's funny, like hearing the perspective of someone who just watches the video, who just doesn't know like the ins and outs of what that video is all about. To go back to the videos, our previous videos, there was always more than one thing that was drastically wrong with the video. Then there was always multiple edits and there was always like lost translation with correspondence with the director. Or we'd be on set and the things that we had talked about before the shoot just weren't executed, or we were rushed, or there was some kind of weird stress factor involved. So it kind of left like a weird taste in our mouths. And then couple that with the fact that the summer before that, I had gone to a surprise birthday party for this guy's girl, and I'm going to dive into some like shoot interview stuff here for a second. And so I went to this surprise party for this girl, and throughout the course of the night, out of nowhere, in the blink of an eye, I became like a total monster. Now, we'd all been drinking and hanging out, and I don't remember anything that happened. Long story short, someone had slipped something in my drink when I was there. Sure. I ended up in the hospital. Like, I jumped out of a moving car. Like, all this crazy stuff happened. Could have been seriously injured. Could have died. Who knows? God forbid what could have happened. So, you know, and screw him. Like, I don't care. Like, I'll put this out on blast now because he showed me zero love or support after that. So after I got better, I reached out to him and I had put on social media that, hey, this happened to me. Didn't tag him. Didn't name him. Mm-hmm. But I said, this happened to me. And his only concern was his brand, his image, and his name. He did not care that we were friends. He did not care that we worked together and were partners. Showed no remorse, no concern. Did nothing to try to narrow down who was at that party, who could have done it. His whole thing was like, nobody could have done that in my place. And I want to see like a toxicology kind of report or whatever. And it was in that very moment that I was like, I'm never working with this kid again. You know, I gave you all this money. I gave you all this support, all this publicity. I was your friend. I treated you like a brother. And that was your only concern and your only care. Well, a big, you know what to you, big metal finger to you. So I was kind of skating around with who we're going to work with for this new music video. And lo and behold, like I said, I saw Black Wolf Imaging, saw all the stuff they've been doing. And it turns out the director was a hometown kid from where I grew up. So linked up with him, and immediately it was like night and day. He wanted to go to the location like weeks before. He wanted to storyboard and scout the different scenes and really put together a true cohesive story before we even got there. So then that way we could shoot everything in perfect sequence. We can have a real tight schedule and we can just get the product done. And so now we're trying to figure out where we're going to shoot this video. We need it to be epic. The song's called Beliefs. Right, this is right when the pandemic was at its height, so I knew that every band and artist was going to be doing some kind of protest video or pandemic video right. or whatever. So I needed to separate us from the pack with that. So originally we were going to do a church. We were going to try to film in like a big old style cathedral church with the stained glass and the altars. And there is a site that you can go on. It's basically like an Airbnb for production, and you can rent out different spots. And I saw this church and it was awesome, but they wanted like $500 an hour with like a eight hour minimum to rent. So I was like, that's not going to work. So I kept scouring the site, and I came across this mansion in upstate New York in Warwick. And I was like, oh my God, this place is gorgeous. It's beautiful. And they put up all these different pictures of a lot of the different scenes that you see. They had pictures of those rooms in the listing. So I hit up Alex. I said, yo, check out this location. He goes, I think this is the one. It was half the price of the church, you know, so it saved us on budget. And the owners of the place, they were just amazing and so accommodating to us and let us do everything and anything we needed to do. We obviously had to make sure that we were staying safe. We had to wear masks. We had to keep social distancing whenever we weren't shooting. We had to keep everyone out of the rooms in the house when we weren't shooting. But there was like so many acres of property that any spot you went was its own little paradise. So it made the shooting experience amazing for my bandmates. It's not like they were just sitting around with their guitar in their hand waiting for their shot. They can go off and explore. They could chill. They can relax. A Castle Raven Rock is what it's called. And that place was awesome. And it's an actual residential home of this married couple. And I was just floored to know that two people live on their own in this huge mansion. We were so depressed when we had to leave. We're like, oh, this is over. We got to leave this place. We want to come back. That was the coolest experience getting that place locked in. And it's actually a vision that I've had for a music video for a very long time, but just could never find the right location. So the fact that we were able to finally do it with Ace as our new singer and as Ray as our new bassist is awesome.
That's awesome, man. And dude, like the real quick too, the funny thing I noticed the very opening of the video, you guys are pulling up in the pickup truck, and the guys are sitting in the back. I'm saying to myself, man, you don't see that no more. That's old school. You don't see people sitting in the back of a pickup anymore.
Yeah, no, I know that. And that was the thing, and I think the fact that like I'm in a new school generation with the metal movement, but I have an old school mentality. But I'm not afraid. But I'm not afraid to evolve into what is going on right now. Kind of sets me and the Silencer apart from a lot of our peers. I feel like because a lot of guys in bands, they just kind of go with whatever the new trend is, and they'll leave their past behind. Right. Me personally, I'm a product of, like you said, Headbangers Ball, MTV. That was my thing. I literally watched that when there was music videos from when I was 9, 8 years old, whatever, all the way up until they stopped playing music. And so to me, every day, life is like a movie. I'm always seeing things like a big production. And it was funny. We were trying to toy with the idea of how are we getting to this mansion? And we actually watched 30 Seconds to Mars, their video, The Kill, which it's a complete spin-off of The Shining. And I always loved that video. I always loved that movie. I love the song. So I was like, we could probably do some kind of Shining thing, but make it not so obvious, you know? Mm-hmm. Because like, whereas 30 Seconds to Mars, that video was a direct, a duplication of The Shining. Right. I was like, let's just take these ideas and concepts. We roll up to a mansion. You don't really know why we're there. So when we were thinking how we're going to do this, we're like, should we rent some kind of like Mercedes Benz? Should we rent a limo? Should we be big balling? And I was like, at the end of the day, I was like, that's not who we are. You know, yeah. Like I rolled up here in my pickup truck. So let's just get you guys to hop in the back. I think it'll look dope. And it's funny because one of the best comments on the video and the YouTube was, five metalheads roll up in the back of a pickup truck to a haunted mansion. What can go wrong?
You know? Right, right.
So it did the desired effect, which was cool.
Now, you said comments on the video. Video came out 2 weeks ago, and you had over 27,000 views already, man. That's freaking awesome.
Yeah, we're pushing. I think I just checked it this morning. It's like almost a 29. So we're like, we're averaging like almost like 2,000 views a day, I guess. It's awesome. It's unbelievable. And that's the one thing that I'm really grateful for and have noticed, that we do really well when we put out our stuff on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I wish that our Spotify numbers were reflective of that a little bit better. And I wish that our Instagram numbers were a little bit more reflective of that. It's just weird and funny to see how the algorithm works for Facebook, Instagram, and how placement works for Spotify. But then meanwhile, YouTube is still, it's kind of its own entity. And, that's where we've noticed that we've made our biggest mark. And again, like we spare no expense with YouTube, with our videos. So when we put them on YouTube, not only do we do a premiere, like every video that we've done, actually, the last two videos we've done, I've done premieres with Metal Injection, who are a huge metal news and rock site. And our boy Frank, who runs Metal Injection, has been gracious enough to give us premieres every time. So that helps. And then the thing that I recommend that bands do is set aside a budget and do an actual ad campaign for your music and for your videos, so that it shows up on search results, so it shows up in news feeds as a clickable link, and that it shows up as like a video, as like a commercial before whatever video you watch. So if you were to go and search, I'm like giving away some secrets now, but if you were to go and let's say you were to do a search for, I don't know, Metallica, okay, on YouTube, you click Metallica, you click on their page, and you're getting ready to watch the new Metallica S&M video. There's a chance that my video is going to play before that video now, because I bid for ad space to get plays, to make sure that I'm seen, that I'm heard. And the beautiful thing about Google is that it's all organic. It's, you know, it's reflective. Our subscriptions have went from 1.23,000 to like 1.28 or 1.29,000 since the video came out. It's reflective in the likes and the comments. And what's the most important thing that I love is that Google has linked me up with like my own like kind of personal assistant for the next 30 days who will cater my ad campaign and cater my demographics and my audience and retention rates based on how they see the numbers working. So if they see that I put our video up and it's being broadcast out to all these different demographics, they might notice. They'll go in there and be like, all right, people who like extreme sports, they've been watching your video. But people who like tennis, they don't like your video. So let's take them out of the equation and let's make room for more of what works in the campaign.
Right.
So I think if more bands did that and didn't just throw their music up there and didn't just put a music video out there, just hoping it's going to stick, they would actually see a much better return on their investment. Whenever we do a music video, our Facebook numbers go up, our YouTube numbers go up, our Spotify numbers go up. Everything goes up across the board. And that's, I think it's directly linked to the fact that I have a big ad campaign and marketing campaign that drives everything. Same thing with Facebook sponsored posts and Instagram sponsored posts. I make sure that I do that as well. And all that just generates traffic to that YouTube link. And I think everyone needs to do that. That's where the game's at now, that you need to be creators and cultivators. Use YouTube as the main platform if you can.
Well, it seems, you know, it's something I even wanted to get into you about is, you know, there's just this big announcement that came out last week that starting October 1st, like Facebook, something with no more music streams. I'm not even sure exactly because it seems like they're already backpedaling a little bit. But you're not going to be able to like stream music. Bands, if bands put up music or stream music, they're going to lose their Facebook page. Like, it's a whole thing. And I'm not actually even understanding it yet for sure. And I don't know if you do, but for you, who's an independent band, does it kind of scare you?
Yeah. So it's funny we're having this conversation because I actually had this conversation with someone yesterday. So from what I understand this model to be is, and from what I've been hearing from some of this like industry insiders is that apparently, and I don't know if this is true or not, but from what I've heard, and I've heard it from multiple sources, so I'm going to take it for what it's worth. Kind of like the big three record labels and music okay. entities and entertainment entities have major stake and share in Facebook. And maybe as far as Spotify and YouTube. And they're basically trying to get the model back in their favor as labels and as holders of content. So okay. what they're doing is they're basically trying to get it to a point where you don't have the platform to put your music or out there anymore, and that you have to then go to them. And now instead of me looking for a record deal, I'm going to look for a spot to get recognized on their platform. So that's the first thing. So I don't know if that's going to be some kind of new website or app they're going to create, or if it's a platform within Facebook. I don't know how that's going to translate, but that's supposedly what's going down. Now, as far as like what it does to the independent artist is that, yeah, it's very frightening because case in point, my music is protected. It's copyrighted. It's licensed. Mm-hmm. Facebook doesn't recognize that Charlie Corletta is sharing his own music. It just it just recognizes that licensed content is being duplicated and shared without consent. So it automatically flags it. It'll block the audio or it'll remove the video, or you can get temporarily blocked. Now, I noticed this happening when I would do like vocal covers or guitar covers and I'd put them out there on Facebook. I'd get flagged. Now, oddly enough, I like hip hop a lot. So during the pandemic, when I couldn't create and record like music with my band, I was recording a lot of like old school hip hop style tracks where I would rap on it. And I created a track literally within like 2 hours, created a video within an hour. So after 3 hours, the whole package is done. And I put it out on, I just put it out on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Within 2 minutes, Facebook flagged it for licensing like content. And I said, that's impossible. I created all the beats. I didn't sample anything. So everything was organically created by me. And I literally just wrote this. And they were claiming that Universal owned the rights to my music. And so I had to dispute it, and I had to put in writing. I said, this is all original content. I even like took screenshots of the time logs. I was like, what the hell are you guys talking about? So they're obviously still trying to work out some things with all that. But it was very odd to see that happen to me with in that regard. But again, it is frightening because if I go and share my own music and it's licensed and it's protected, all of a sudden Facebook can just turn around and be like, you can't share your own music, which is ridiculous. But again, there's an obvious monetary reason why they're doing this. There is some kind of end game and some kind of end goal because right now it's kind of a free for all. Yeah. Independent artists don't need labels anymore. I'm able to produce this killer music video and have my shows be packed. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very rare that the Silencer plays a show where there's no one there. We had one of those in the 3 years that we've been playing live. And that's all because we know how to maneuver around the new way of doing things, the new platforms. So like I said, the big three are coming in. They're trying to kind of monopolize on everything. And on top of that, Facebook, aside from whether or not they're in cahoots with Facebook, Facebook is getting heat from the record labels saying, hey, man, you're letting this person distribute the music. Now, it's funny. With YouTube, I can go right now and put a guitar cover up of like Boston. Right? Mm-hmm. Like I could do Peace of Mind and put it up there. And YouTube will just say, it'll say that you cannot monetize this video. You can't make money off of it. It's licensed to someone else, but basically congrats, you put up a video. That's, in my opinion, I feel like that's how the model should be. That's just the way we're living in. But you still have these big fat people, like these big fat suits, you know, the people who made all their millions off the old model, the old industry, who still want to keep a hold on that. You still have like, it's funny because I think like people were giving heat to Lars Ulrich of Metallica, right? Like with the whole Napster thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what his stance is. I know that they backtracked on that. Now they love streaming and they put out free videos every day for you to watch their concerts. But those old school cats, I don't want to say him directly, but those old school cats are still stuck in that old model and they're clinging on for life to any like remnants that they can. And it's kind of, at the end of the day, we're in a period of time in the music industry where there is a revolution going on. It doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like it because in some regards, it's a struggle to make yourself seen and heard. But at the same time, it's really not. If anything, you have way more opportunity, way more platforms to get seen and heard. The only thing that sucks is that person to person, like physical, tangible interaction is kind of removed. So that makes it more difficult. I recommend for bands to just, when this whole pandemic's done, I know the world's going to be changed for a little while, but when we can get back to full-blown live shows, I recommend that people stop relying so heavily on the numbers on social media, even though that's where the game is going, and just get out and meet every single person, and don't be afraid. That's how we've been successful. That's how all of my bands have been successful. It's always been through word of mouth. It's always been through me treating every single person I meet like I've known them for years and truly appreciating and valuing the time that they give me and the energy they give me. Too many people think, too many people take the easy way out. It's so easy, dude, to post a video, to post a link and just like click the thumbs up and the hearts and the little emojis.
Yeah, yeah.
But where's the person-to-person interaction? It's gone. Even just commenting, what is that? What does a comment really mean? However, if you see me in person, I look you in the eye, I put my arm around you, you feel that. There's some real tangible there. And so I strongly urge people to play the game, get educated as much as they can on what the new model is and try to work it the best you can based off of what you're knowledgeable about and what you're educated about in regards to the new model. And just get your butts out there and play live and meet everybody that you possibly can. Tape trading was successful back in the day. Flyering was successful back in the day. Okay, maybe you're not going to give them that tangible, but you become the tangible. Like, give them, you got to give everyone a little piece of you in order to survive in this game right now.
Absolutely. So going forward, I saw you guys are already to get ready to do the next video and single.
Yeah, the fall, which is oddly enough going to come out in the fall. That was not fall? Meant to. Yeah, it wasn't even meant to be. But yeah, so in about 2 weeks, we're going to head out to Brooklyn, New York. And we're going to be in Greenpoint, and we're going to be shooting a new music video for the fall. This is the second single to feature our new singer, Ace, and our bassist, Ray. And another kind of cool concept, when I first met with you and talked in regards to the release for Within and Die Trying about 2 years ago, on the table, we were promoting suicide prevention and anti-bullying. And that is something that will always stay with me. It's not just a like a fad or a once a month thing. It's an everyday thing. It's something that I instill in my students. It's something that I instill in my friends and family. So one of the things I noticed that isn't talked about as much as it should be is the astronomical rates of suicide in young men. A lot of times we're told to kind of buckle down to like man up. And, you know, I know the stigma is changing, but there is still a stigma there where men are told to like, you know, be strong and stay focused and work hard and be there for whoever and kind of keep your mouth shut. And well, mental health doesn't discriminate. It affects who it's going to affect, and that's it. And whether it's based off of just genetics or it's based off of life experiences that have triggered something, depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, this is all real stuff. And I've had a lot of friends that I've lost because of it. And so especially now with the pandemic and all this isolation, I feel people need now more than ever to feel some kind of identifier, to be able to identify with someone else who recognizes that this is an issue. So the whole premise of the video is going to revolve around a young man who life's just dealing him bad cards. And the whole premise is that at some point he's considering taking his life, which kind of plays off of what the Within video was. But Within was kind of geared towards a younger fan base, younger crowd. He was a young girl, a teenage girl, whereas now we're going into adulthood with young men. And the whole goal and premise at the end of the video is that there is a reason to live. There's people who are there for him. And that's the message that we want to translate, which falls in line really nicely with Ace's lyrics. We basically talk about so many words like, you know, you have to brace for the fall because inevitably everyone in life will have that moment in time where you fall. And it might happen multiple times, but it's how you get up. It's how you persevere. It's how you put into action this positive mindset where you, where you're gonna like pick yourself up, or you're gonna allow others to help you up and you're gonna rise to another level. And so given the content of the lyrics, given the state of affairs in the world, and given my personal beliefs and stance on all this, we want to inspire people that, you know, life is worth living and that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and let the men of this country know that you are not alone. Like, we've all probably at some point in time been through it. We just don't always talk about it.
Right. Now, are either of these two singles, are they going to be just standalone singles? Is there an EP or a full length in the works, or?
Yep. So there is an EP that we had announced, right at the beginning of the pandemic that we wanted to release. The EP is going to be entitled Curtain Call, which hey, we're there. I'm here.
Okay.
I'm still here. All right. So the EP is going to be titled Curtain Call. And I'm a huge wrestling buff, right? So, you know, remember the Curtain Call in Madison Square Garden? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a – I kind of thought that would be cool to call it that. The imagery kind of reflects back on what the last couple of months have been here in the world. But yeah, so the plan is to have a full EP, but nice. We're taking the model and the stance that the CEO of Spotify talks about, release singles. And this band has been a single-driven band since day one. The only mistake that we made was we would release a single like once or twice a year, whereas right. Now we're trying to release a single over the next 2 or 3 months, like in a row, take a break, finish the EP, then release another 3 singles. So there will be an EP called Curtain Call, and those 2 singles, Beliefs and The Fall, will be a part of that EP. And then hopefully that will carry us into 2021, right before we're supposed to perform next September at Blue Ridge Rock Festival. That's like the big, cool. That's like the big end goal for us right now, is to just get out to that big festival. So we got to keep our fingers crossed.
Awesome. Dude, this has been always a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah,
we could go on for hours and hours.
I know. We didn't even talk about the state of affairs in the world of professional wrestling.
Ugh. I could have. We might have to do a separate show for that one.
I'm down, dude. I'm always down to talk with you. You know, it's always a pleasure. You always bring like your A game when you're talking with me. I'm just always impressed and honored that you take the time, you know, that you take the time to like actually care about what we're doing and be educated on it before talking to me. It's like such a breath of fresh air, dude. And that's why after our first conversation, I was so impressed. And the fact that I'm talking to Chubby Dudley, just like a whole nother level, like, you know, I kind of mark out a little bit. The old ECW fanboy in me marks out for that. And again, Bay, dude, I couldn't be more thankful and feel more blessed to have met you over these years. So thank you so much.
Dude, I feel the same way. You know, I remember like when we talked that first time, like after that interview, like I had such a good feeling and vibe, and I was just like, I made a real true new friend.
Hell yeah, dude. That's what it's all about. And that's like what I was saying, man. It's all about like that real connection. You know, that's the only reason I still do this is for the opportunity to be able to meet amazing new people with like minds.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, just congrats. I saw that you have Carmine Appice coming on.
Yeah, man. Thursday morning. It's, you know, the fellow Italians here. I got to talk to them a few years ago, and it was an amazing thing, and I can't wait to talk to them again Thursday.
Awesome. I'll be checking into that one.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so where should we send everybody? Where's the best place to go to find everything on the silencer, to see this amazing video, to check out this castle?
All right, so if you want to see the video for Beliefs and the behind-the-scenes documentary that we put out, you can check that out on The Silencer TV on YouTube. Make sure to subscribe to our channel, The Silencer TV on YouTube. Check out the singles on Spotify and Apple Music. All of our music is available there. We're strongly urging all of our friends and fans to go and check us out on Spotify. Let's get those Spotify numbers way up there. Follow us on Instagram. We're very active there at The Silencer Music. And then across the board on social media, The Silencer Music on Facebook and The Silencer 1027 on Twitter, which Twitter, we got to bump those numbers up. But again, primarily YouTube, Spotify, Instagram. You follow us there, then all is gravy.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Dude, much love, success to you, to the rest of the band. And yeah, man, spread the word. And work that algorithm. Break their balls and make them numbers go up.
Yeah, we're trying, man. We're trying. I'll definitely be reposting this all week. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. Great catching up, dude.
Same here.
Take care.
Later.